How do you see God in your life? You see that big judge in the sky who we want to make sure we don't cross lest we be punished, so we kind of walk that fine line and keep our head down and try not to look when we know we're not necessarily doing things exactly the way we're supposed to, kind of always venturing a little further out, but always trying to remember that, you know, God's watching and I got to watch over that. Or is God just sort of that gift giver that sort of showers candy from the sky, and as long as he continues to pour out his gifts upon us, then we know he's that great, wonderful thing from the sky that gives us all these wonderful things? I mean, or do we try and blend the two ideas together, really, in so many ways? It fascinates me. God pours out gifts upon us. He really does. He gives gifts upon us. And in other ways, it's a fascination to me. But I think one of the most remarkable things that we have within humanity is this capacity to give gifts, to be a gift of self, to be able to either offer someone something, or maybe our time, or maybe our attention, or our investment of self in some way. It's remarkable. But as we have this ability to give gifts, there's something truly wonderful about it. The more we get to know the person we want to give this to, the more we can try and make that a very special gift for them. I think one of the greatest nightmares of life is trying to find the right gift for someone at the same time. I don't know, there's like a subtle line between these. So sometimes we can find that perfect gift and we know that's exactly what we give that person. It's excellent. We want them to be able to receive it with the same kind of joy and capacity that we put into it and really invested ourselves into. Other times we can agonize over, you know, just that right gift. We've known the person for so long and, you know, we just want to give them that right gift, you know. Sometimes it doesn't have to be so difficult. My mother buys me socks every year. I think they're the greatest gift ever because I managed to burn through the other socks, so more socks is always a great thing. It's not terribly difficult at this point in my life. My feet have finally stopped growing, so, you know, she doesn't have to think about it. Black socks, they show up. It's the greatest gift ever. It's wonderful. On the other hand, sometimes, you know, we want to give a good gift and it doesn't necessarily come across as hopeful as we wanted to, or maybe it gets kind of lost along the way in its intention. I hope nobody gets mad at me for this. I'm not a huge fan of chocolate. Just personally. I could spend the entire rest of my life and never eat chocolate again, and that would be okay. I love brownies, so please don't ask me what the difference is, because I don't really know. I love brownies, but I could live my entire life without chocolate and never give it a second thought. I eat it, but I don't seek it out. I never purchase it for myself. Mostly because eventually I end up with some anyway, so I always know I have some, but I live a life completely without chocolate, it's okay. And I still remember, right after my wisdom teeth came out, still in a little bit of pain, still couldn't eat anything harder than, well, Jell-O actually was the greatest resistance I was allowed inside my mouth at that time, but, you know, it was at that time, and my mother wanted to give me something nice, you know, maybe something cold to sort of ease the, you know, numb the pain, and something nice. So I still remember she came in the door, she wanted to bring me this nice thing, and there in her hand was a Dairy Queen frozen hot chocolate. And there was that moment between when my mother was really excited to give it to me when she came through the door, and when she actually got to me, that she remembered that this was the one child among six that actually had zero desire for hot chocolate frozen or otherwise. And I remember my mother just suddenly not being as excited about the gift as she wanted to be. I mean, she wanted me this gift, and I did. I took it and I wanted to receive it joy because there was that love there. There was genuinely that love there. Maybe that's why she doesn't use my socks now. But, you know, there was genuinely that love there, that I desired to give her this thing. I think about all that. I do. As I think about this incredible, really remarkable gospel. Because what we have in this gospel are two sons and a very interesting father. Really, in so many ways, a very, very interesting father. Because the other son clearly sees his father as an ATM or a dispensary of some kind. Dad, what are you worth to me? You know, dollars and cents. Financially. He actually looks his father in the eye one day and says, let's pretend you died, and I get my inheritance now. He asks for his father's death. Obviously, he doesn't see a father. He sees a bank. He wants to smash that piggy bank and see what comes out. Even more curious to me is the father who indulges him and says, all right, that's what I'll do. And he divides his estate in half, this gift that he was building up for his children. Not just its dollars and cents, not just its financial value as the land, but his investment of very self. And he cuts it in half, and he gives it to his son. And his son goes, and he burns it all away, because it's just money to him. And it's gone. Because anyone who's in charge of a household can tell you, the money comes, the money goes. Bills keep coming, so the money keeps going out. It has to be more than just about that. But that's all the son saw. The son saw this one who just gives him gifts, who just gives him things, who just covers his expenses. And it's only when he is faced with the genuine reality that he now has to try and build something for himself, when he is sent to work to feed pigs, then he actually has to hit bottom. Don't underestimate, when Jesus told this parable, to go to feed the pigs was considered the lowest of the low jobs. Remember that swine are unclean in Jewish law, and so to stand in and be among the most unclean of the unclean animals, this base creature in so many ways that they describe, and to have to feed them and maintain that, the man's at rock bottom. It doesn't get lower. Being jobless actually would not be as bad as being the guy who feeds the pigs. And it's only then that he comes face to face with the reality that he didn't have an ATM. He had a father. And he wanted to know that father's love somewhere. Now that he had sort of burned through it and separated himself from any of it, he wanted to know that father's love. It's only then that he stands up and actually realizes for himself that he can return to this one. This man who was, in fact, his father from the very beginning. This man who willingly gave him all of these good things from the very beginning. And he will stand before him and say, I died as your son. I don't deserve that relationship anymore. But let me know your love. Just to work for you. Just to be near to that. And to long for it. And he sets out for home. And while he's still a long way off, and I think this is so critical for all of us, because while he is still a long way off, his father sees him and comes running. Which is two miracles all by itself. Because now you've got an old man who can actually see him a long way off, so his eyes must be incredible. And he's willing to try and spring towards him. So try and imagine that little old man trying to run and see him all at the same time. Because his son comes home. Realize that someone who wanted his money left, but his son actually came home. And he knew it. I don't know how, but he did. And he greets him there. It's a great reminder to us that every time we might wander away from God, that every time we might find ourselves distant from this one who has given us so many of the things, God comes running for us if we but turn back to him. God wants to be close to us. God will chase after us. All we have to do is turn back to him. And he stands before his father, and he says his repeated lines, this practice verse, this practice thing that he has said so many times to himself, and says, I know I died, and I don't deserve that sonship anymore. But I want to come home. And his father takes him back with open arms. That great reminder where he wraps him in his arms and says, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet and a robe around him, because my son has come home to me. This prodigal son. And a feast begins, this great celebration, because his father who had lost his son, whose very heart was in both of his sons, and I'm sure of it, because we'll get to that in a second, but his heart was in his very sons, saw a man who wanted his money leave and a son come home to him. And there is rejoicing for them. Interestingly enough, there's also the older son. This older son finds out that his brother has come back. This brother who he had to watch destroy his father. This brother who he had to watch hurt his family. Hurt his family farm. Hurt everything that he was building towards. All while he was working. But what is the relationship that the older son sees with his father? What is this relationship? Well, he refuses to come out. He refuses to go into the house. So his father, whose heart is his son's, goes out to his son. Or at least, he always saw him as his son. And what does the older boy say? He says, all these years, I slaved for you. Apparently, he didn't have sons. He had one guy who thought he was a bank, and another guy who thought he was a taskmaster. All these years, I slaved for you. I served for you. I was your servant. I did your work. I did all those things as you asked, when you asked, and nothing in return. That's how the son sees himself. Nothing in return. I slave for you. And the father actually now has to go out and address his son and remind him something so very important, something so very precious. He has to say, my son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. It's a remarkable moment. We suddenly find ourselves seeing God as this one that we have to be obedient to constantly, that we have to slave for in order to stay faithful to, that we constantly have to build our entire life to having this particularness so that we are faithful day in and day out with nothing to show for it. If we suddenly feel like our relationship with God is one where we're constantly doing everything He asks, but He gives us nothing in return, then we too have become prodigal sons. Son separated from the father, distracted by the world around us. And I think it's so important that whether we're a younger son struggling with a life of dissipation, expecting God to just rain these gifts upon us, we are an older son who constantly tries to be faithful to these things, thinking that we struggle and we struggle and we struggle and we have nothing to show for it. I think it is so very important for us in the season of Lent to be invited back to that Father. This Father who comes out to us. Notice at no time does the Father say, well, he can come to me if he's got a problem. But a Father who comes out to us and says with love that he wants to be close to us. Consider for a moment these words. Hear these words as this invitation from him. My son, my daughter, you are here with me, and everything I have is yours. Celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost,